For a new Ford, make it Bill Curry, Tampa Bay's first family of Ford for over 60 years. At Bill Curry, our prices are better than good. They're the best, and they're right up front with our $5,000 best price guarantee. That's right, Bill Curry will meet or beat any Ford dealer's best offer or give you $5,000 cash. Shop our huge selection of new Fords, then get the lowest price, the best price, or we'll give you $5,000 cash. Only at Bill Curry Ford, located on Dale Mabry, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium.
All right, welcome to the Free Stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com. Bobby Fenton with you. Week 9 edition of the show brought to you by Bill Curry Ford. Bucks get set for an afternoon, late afternoon kickoff on Sunday against the Seattle Seahawks. And, of course, coming off the loss to the Tennessee Titans. We'll talk about all of those things on the show today with an emphasis more on the coming week since we're doing a Friday edition. Going to try not to dwell on anything too much from last week. Although there are things that need to be addressed. The Free Stretch, as always, brought to you by our good friends at BillCurryFord.com. And as always, at Bill Curry Ford, where nowhere else is like this. You buy a car from them, and they've got brand new Fords. It's called Bill Curry Ford, but they also have pre-owned. They also have used. They also have non-Fords. They got all kinds of stuff over there. So you buy anything from them, and it is covered by the nationwide lifetime warranty, unlimited years, unlimited miles. As long as you own the car, you have that warranty. It could be 5 years from now. It could be 10 years from now. If you bought it from Bill Curry Ford, you're still the one that owns it. You have engine problems, something goes wrong, take it in. It might be, and it probably will be, covered by the warranty, okay? This is something that you won't see anywhere else, and it's applying to everything you can see on the lot, everything you can see on the website, BillCurryFord.com. That's C-U-R-R-I-E. BillCurryFord.com. So check it out on the website. Go in person, a mile and a half north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry, where they've been serving the Tampa area for almost 60 years now. It's on the east side of the road, just north of Hillsboro. Ask for Sean Sullivan, my good friend, fellow Jesuit High alum, and mention me, mention the Free Stretch, mention Joe Bucks Fan. You get the Joe Bucks Fan discount on top of the already transparent online pricing. Again, that's all the time. Thanks to them for sponsoring the show. And so like I'm saying here, let's talk a little bit about the Titans game. And again, I know it's late in the week. If this was a Monday show, I'd spend a lot more time on it. But it's not even the Titans game itself that matters here. It's the things that we see in these games that keep recurring that tell me things about this team. So before the season started, before I start, email me if you want to, bobbygameday@yahoo.com. B-O-B-B-Y-G-A-M-E-D-A-Y, bobbygameday@yahoo.com, or follow me on Twitter, interact with me there, at bobbygameday. Okay, so before the season started, I did a show with Todd Wright. I went over to his condo, we did a show together. It's the first time I've really had a guest of any kind on the Free Stretch, and we talked about a bunch of things. But one of the things he mentioned, and this was his original idea, and this was when it was still the offseason. We had hired Bruce Arians. The glow was still there. We got this great new coach with a track record, veteran guy. You know what you're getting. He means business, on and on and on. And Todd said, you know, one of the concerns I have about Bruce Arians is that he retired. And Todd said, you know, he went into broadcasting, and it seemed with the guy, like his personality is, I mean, he, you know, some coaches are boring and you don't even think of a broadcaster when they retire. You think, oh, yeah. Like, you don't think, like, and I'm not picking on Doug Marrone, but like for the Jags, Doug Marrone, you don't think, oh man, he's going to go into color commentating when he's done. You know, he doesn't have that personality. But Bruce Arians does. So he retired and actually started doing it. And even though it seemed like on paper a good match, something he'd be really good at, and it was only one season, but it was just kind of lukewarm, kind of eh. And Todd said, you know, I wonder if Bruce Arians thought he was going to hang it up, make some good money doing this broadcasting thing and do that for a few years right off into the sunset. And then the broadcasting thing didn't work out the way he thought it would. And he didn't end up re-upping and doing that for another year. And all of a sudden he's sitting there, well, I ain't old enough to retire. I got to do something. And maybe that's what got him back into coaching. Maybe that was never the intention, and maybe he's not 100% fully all into this. And I don't mean emotionally all in, because I know he's that, but all in. You know how it is with these head coaches. So now that we've had, and it's only been 7 games, I mean, let me just say right now, it takes a coaching staff longer than that to craft a team in their image. Not that you wouldn't see differences even in the early going, but I'm not going to say I'm over Bruce Arians at this point. I'm not saying that. But I am concerned. I'm starting to get concerned for a couple main reasons. One reason is his actual in-game strategy, which we're about to talk about. And two is his overall philosophy. And you heard him this week probably saying, I don't know what you guys want me to say, but I want to beat Seattle. I don't care about anything else. And I don't care about 2020. And why would I trade somebody that we need? This is before the trade deadline. And we're just trying to win games, blah, blah, blah. And again, the same thing happened with Dirk Cutter last year. I mean, coaches want to win. I get it. But the Bucks right now, and I talked about this even before the Titans game, and the Bucks ended up losing, so it only reinforces what I was saying, the Bucks are nowhere near where they need to be, and they need to be in building mode, and they need a long-term, big-picture approach to everything they are doing right now. And probably should have had that approach for some time, and I'm guilty of it too, though. A lot of us keep fooling ourselves every year, keep trying to say, oh, maybe 9-7, I don't know, 10-6, you think? And they keep doing things that are designed to just keep their heads above water in this perpetual motion machine of mediocrity instead of really truly thinking, what is it going to take to be the type of not just team, teams are year to year, like this 2019 Tampa Bay Bucks is the Bucks team, but no, forget teams for a minute. What is it going to take for us to be the type of organization that we want to be? The way they transformed not their team, but their organization from the mid-90s through to the late 90s and eventually leading to the early 2000s, culminating in a Super Bowl win in 2002, which to this day is the last playoff game they ever won, going on 17 years now. So that's what the Bucks need to be trying to do. Not making their team better. And again, follow me on this. They need to make their organization better. It's kind of like how you'll hear college football coaches, I should say. Urban Meyer used to say this, and whatever you think about Urban Meyer, don't question how he built a program. But Urban Meyer at UF used to say, you know, we, when I got here, were okay, and I got us to be a better team at first. But he's like, after that second or third year, we were a better program. And they won 2 national titles in 3 seasons. And it was a program. It wasn't any just one team year to year. We had a program, he would say. And it's so true. Like, it's such a... I know it's kind of semantic in a way. You're thinking, Bobby, what's the difference? But it really is, again, an organizational thing that goes all throughout, not just the 53-man roster and not even just the coaching staff, but everywhere. And it's a philosophical approach that takes time to actually see results play out for. But the Bucks aren't even trying to do that every year. They're just, again, I mean, they're not swimming, they're treading water. And so when I hear Bruce Arians say things like he said this week, and I know he's frustrated, I know nobody likes being 2-5, and nobody wants to go 4-12 or whatever it ends up being, or 5-11. You know, he's thinking, I want to go win this week and win next week and put together a 4-game winning streak, and damn it, we're going to get back in this playoff, right? That's how competitors think. I get it. I totally get it. But that's not what we need right now. And if Bruce Arians at his age and his situation in life and what made him come back to coaching isn't ready to do that with this team, then he's not going to be here very long. He's not going to leave after this season. But if he can't handle the idea of what needs to happen with this team, and we, I think, or I shouldn't say we can't all agree, we should be able to agree that this is bigger than just trying to stop a losing streak or trying to beat Seattle. And I hope they beat Seattle. Sure, I mean, I'm not saying I don't want the Bucks to win, but there are bigger issues at play and bigger fish to fry. And, you know, all we have in front of us right now is a Seattle game on Sunday. So as a fan, a lot of people just want to think about that. No, I go Bucks, whatever. And fine, I of course go Bucks. But man, we're not there, all right? And I don't know if Bruce Arians understands that. I don't know if he thinks maybe he's going to take on a role of being a coach for a couple years and handing the reins over to someone like Todd Bowles or Byron Leftwich, and if he sees himself as a groomer, as someone who is coaching not just players, but coaching other coaches and training to become head coaches, either here or other places. And if he's going to do that, you know, and maybe that's part of his plan, and I don't know if this is something, this is me saying all this, okay? I don't know what the Glazers talked about with Bruce Arians when they hired him. I don't know what the philosophy is. I'm just saying what I think it needs to be and what I hope they understand it should be. So that's one concern I have about Bruce Arians. But forget that for a minute, okay? Because let's just talk about the here and now. Let's talk about the actual X's and O's. Let's talk about football and not just organization building. The Bucks lost the game on Sunday for a bunch of different reasons. One of the reasons, and I'll go through a bunch of them, was red zone play calling and execution. In the first half, of course, they played very poorly turnover-wise and gave the Titans two touchdowns on cheap turnovers. One was a bonked face mask fumble that was charged to Jameis Winston officially, but statistically, really, it was on Jensen. In reality, it was on Jensen, I should say, because he snapped the ball when it wasn't supposed to be snapped yet. But whatever. Defense recovered. Titans were set up in an and goal situation, and they scored. Same thing happened on a pick that Jameis threw inside our own 20, and we can argue about that. Bruce Arians adamant after the game that nothing was Jameis Winston's fault with regards to interceptions, that his receivers ran bad routes. I don't honestly care about that anymore, because all I know is it seems to happen to Jameis Winston and this team more than anybody else. Whatever. Point is, Titans scored another touchdown off that. But even with those things happening, the Bucs got themselves in the game even before halftime. They scored a touchdown before the half, which I was really impressed by. But they had multiple series in the red zone where they kicked field goals, including some real tight inside the five, where they gave themselves no chance with the play calling and just generally didn't execute. All right, so that's sloppy. But all that even resulted in the Bucs having a lead in the second half. So let's go to the second half drive charts, all right? And I harp on this week after week after week, and I don't understand why coaches who get paid so much money and who know so much about football, I mean, these guys are savants, the things they can see, the things they can spot, they know more about football than I'll ever know in my life. They've forgotten more about football than I'll ever know in my life. I readily admit that, which is why it's so vexing when the simple things don't get done right, because that's the part that's not supposed to be that hard. And when I get the most upset about the Buccaneers isn't when Jameis throws a pick, or isn't when their offensive line can't keep the pocket clean for more than half of a second, or isn't when their secondary gets torched. The most upset I get about the Bucs is when they actively do things to thwart their own chances of winning, as if it wasn't hard enough when you're undermanned like they are, talent-wise, and they are undermanned, to win. But let's make it even harder by voluntarily screwing things up, things that good teams know better than, okay? And one of those things, and they have no analytics staff that I know of, Thomas Bassinger raised the point on Twitter during the game, they need to get at least a couple people over there who can get it through the coaching staff's heads. Here is what you do to increase your probability of winning, and forget all the gut instinct crap that you think is smart, when in reality you're doing things that are absolutely detrimental to your own good. Fourth and one. In the late third quarter, the Bucs at this point have a 23-17 lead. A touchdown or even a field goal at this point, but especially a touchdown, would make this a two-score game going into the fourth quarter and would be absolutely huge. You need to have the mentality at this point in the game that if I can extend this lead from 6 to 13 or 14 if I go for 2, or even 9 if I kick a field goal, then I am in the catbird seat in the fourth quarter. So what do we have? We have fourth and one GD yard from the plus side of the 50. They're on the Titans 43. It's fourth and one. There's 5.5 minutes to go in the quarter, in the third quarter at this point, 23-17. And we punt the football. That is criminally negligent, okay? And this is the part where it makes me think, you know, Bruce Arians is supposed to be this great head coach. How does he not know that you don't punt this ball? But fourth and one from the Tennessee 43, we punt it because they still think that field position is more important than having the ball and scoring. So instead of taking a chance, it's a very small chance because on fourth and one, your odds of getting it are well above 50%. But instead of saying, let's go get this first down, and then we're going to keep going and get into field goal range. You only need a few more yards to be in field goal range at that point. And maybe we can go and score a touchdown and really put this game into our grasp where the Titans are really backed up now and they won't have a great chance to score twice in the fourth quarter. Instead, we punt the ball from the Tennessee 43. It was fair caught at the Tennessee 8, okay? So what were we afraid of there? If we go for it and we don't get it, what happens? Tennessee gets the ball first and 10 at their own 43. Now they have it first and 10 at their own 8. That's 35 yards, right? That's a big deal, right? 35 yards. No, it's not a big deal. It is nowhere near as big of a deal as conceding possession of the ball and a chance to score. So what do you think happened? What were we so afraid of? Tennessee first and 10 at their own 43. If we miss this, we just can't afford that. So after it was first and 10 from the Tennessee 8 instead of the 43, how many plays do you think it took for them to get back to the point on the field that they would have been anyway if we'd missed the fourth down, which we probably wouldn't have? Okay? Four plays. Four plays later, they were at their own 42-yard line, the same place they would have been anyway. We sacrificed a chance at a two-score lead. We sacrificed a chance at a possible touchdown. And we sacrificed a chance to put the game, I'm not going to say away because it was too early to say that, but to put the game and our win likelihood percentage in an extremely high position so we could pat ourselves on the back for saving field position and kicking it 35 yards. Four plays it took them, and they crossed that point on the field. They went on to kick a field goal that drive, and they made the score 23-20. Okay, now it's fourth and one. We get the ball back, and we drive a little bit, but not really. I think we got one first down, but then on the next play, next series of plays, it ends up Jameis scrambles. He almost gets to the stick, but he couldn't quite get there. So now it's fourth and one at our own 30-yard line. Now this one, admittedly, is a little bit more of a decision. You're at your own 30, but again, it's still, the field position is not nearly as important as you think. It's how much do you have to go? If it's fourth and eight, okay. If it's fourth and less than a yard, and this one was, I believe, less than a yard. It was like a half a yard. Unless you're on your own, like, two-yard line or something, which that's not possible to be fourth and less than a yard from your own two. But let's say you're backed up on your own, like, 11-yard line or something. Even then, it's less than a yard. Go get it. You have a chance. And analytics back me up on this. And for those of you who you cringe when you hear the word analytics, you're the one that needs to catch your ass up to things and not say, oh, I don't want to hear about analytics. Well, that's your problem, all right? Because you need to learn about analytics a little bit. But the numbers are clear. You go for it. So they punt it again on fourth and less than a yard. That's twice now they've punted. This was with 13:49 to go in the fourth quarter, and now the score is 23-20. This punt was actually pretty good by Bradley Pinion. It was all the way back to the Tennessee 20, and on top of that, there was a holding call, even after an Adam Humphries fair catch. I think it was a fair catch. And so the ball went all the way back to the 10. So the Bucs netted 60 yards on this punt, going from their own 30 to the Tennessee 10. That's a big deal, right? 60 yards of field position? No, it's not as big of a deal as having the ball. What's the most important thing in football? Scoring points. What's the second most important thing in football? Having the ball so you can score points. We ceded possession of the ball for 60 yards. So how many plays, even from their own 10, do you think it took the Tennessee Titans to cross the point on the field that we were so afraid they'd be at if we went for it and missed? Fourth and one from the 30. If we missed, they get first and 10 from our 30. Bobby, are you crazy going for it from your own 30? Well, this time, since it was such a great punt by Pinion, it took them a whole six plays to cross our 30-yard line instead of the four it took on the drive before. And after that, it was five more plays after those six till their ass was in the end zone and took the lead that they would never relinquish and going 90 yards in 11 plays for what would be the game-winning touchdown. They had the ball. They went and got the points they needed. We had the ball. We kicked it to them because we couldn't get a half yard. We were afraid we couldn't get a half yard. And then, of course, the Bucs finally did go for it when they absolutely had to. And I bet you they would have kicked that one, too, unless they had had to. And the chance, and they did not get it on that one, on what was an awful effort by the offensive line. I didn't have a problem with the play call, honestly. I mean, I don't like throwing the ball on short yardage, fourth or third downs. I mean, just go get it. So I'm not going to criticize Arians for that, honestly. But that's two things that, again, a coach's decision by his our own hand actively reduced our chances to win. So even after all that, you know, the Bucs are trying to get the ball back in the fourth quarter. And they did on that field goal fake thing, which we'll talk about in a minute. But when we were trying to get the ball back, we only had one timeout instead of three. Remember that? We're trying to get the ball back, and we're having a hard time keeping the clock stopped. And if we'd had three timeouts, it could have been one, two, three, three and out, punt it back. They probably would have only burned about 15 seconds. But we only had the one timeout. Do you know why? Because, one, we challenged a pass interference call that anybody who has paid any attention to the league so far this year with this new pass interference challenge rule, and even if the rule was more forgiving than it was, even if they were overturning lots of calls, which they're not, but even if they were, this one was not getting overturned. And in the second half of a close game or a game you're trailing, you need to protect your timeouts like they are gold, just in case you're down by that one score late and you need those timeouts to get the ball back. So we just throw a challenge. Hey, let's challenge this PI, which they're never going to in a million years change. Bad coaching. Bad decision. Not using common sense makes me question Bruce Arians. The other timeout we lost, and I'm not sure this directly goes back to Arians, but it goes back to how well run the team is, was we had a delay of game coming up, and Jameis burned one to try and prevent the delay of game and keep a drive going, which I don't think even mattered. I think we ended up not getting the first down anyway. So we call a timeout because we got sloppy getting the play onto the field and ran out of time before we could snap it, and we burned another one on a completely idiotic pass interference challenge. So now we got one timeout instead of three. So you look at the team in the red zone, you look at the way they use timeouts and just general strategy, you look at the way they treat fourth downs, it's amateur hour. So, and I know, I mean, Bruce Arians, again, he has a track record, he's won before. Why am I seeing these? We're not good enough. I mean, first of all, good teams don't do these things anyway, but at least if we were good, we could probably overcome some of these decisions. And it's the same crap week after week. In Bruce Arians' defense, he's not the only one. I watched the Chiefs, and this was even more dumb than anything Arians did. I watched the Chiefs on Sunday night playing a high-powered Packers team with a tough offense to stop. And the Packers led 31-24. We're in the waning minutes of the game. And the Chiefs had the ball at midfield, and they had a 4th-and-3. And I can't remember the exact amount of time, but it was something like 3, maybe 4 minutes. And they had some timeouts. So in their mind, they're going to punt this and call timeouts and get the ball back and go down and score their touchdown. All this in 3 or 4 minutes. 4th-and-3 from midfield. All right? And you're going to give the ball back to Aaron Rodgers. Down by a score. So what do y'all think happened? The Chiefs punted it. And guess what? And I was so glad to see it. They never touched the ball again. So in a game that you trailed by one score in the fourth quarter on a 4th-and-3, you made your last offensive snap of the night a punt. And that, again, Andy Reid, you see what he does with offenses. You see what he's done with the Chiefs. And you think to yourself, man, this guy, what a hell of a football coach. And yet they can't get the simple things right. I mean, why can't we have the perfect football coach who's as smart as these guys are, guys like Andy Reid, guys like Bruce Arians, but who actually know how to manage a freaking football game? It's like they've been spent so much time watching film. It's like they spent so much time like diagramming plays that they forget to actually watch football games and understand how the basic thing. Maybe they need to play Madden. Your average like 12-year-old kid who plays Madden knows game strategy better than these guys do for as much football as they know. Your last offensive snap of the night in a game you trail by one score with minutes to go is a punt. And not on 4th-and-20 or something because of a holding penalty. 4th-and-3 from midfield. Could not believe it. Saw it happen with the Bears, who had a chance to make their lives a lot easier on the game-winning field goal and just ran the ball. Eddie Pinheiro, Florida Gator, did a hell of a job at Florida. He missed the kick. Bears lose. Matt Nagy getting a lot of criticism. The bloom's off that rose after last year, Coach of the Year, all this stuff. And this year, his name is Mud. And it should be. That was a terribly handled final couple minutes by the Bears. The Broncos, same thing. They have a 3rd-and-5. They get the first down. They win. They win. Go get it. They mush it up the middle on purpose. Don't get it. But hey, nice punt. We pinned them back. We're going to let our defense win this because they're so far back. And Joe Flacco was absolutely right after the game, if you didn't see his quotes. And he pretty much just called out his head coach directly. He's like, yeah, you know, you got 3rd and 5, a chance to win the game. He's like, and I know the punt sets him back. He's like, but we know by now that it doesn't matter that much where the field position starts out. Teams can, he said teams can get into field goal range easily, and they can. They can. What's more important is having the ball and having the lead and scoring and making the lead bigger, or if time's about to run out, keeping the ball so they never get the ball again. So it's all over the league. It's an epidemic. It makes me angry whenever I see it anywhere, just because of the sheer wrongness of it all. But it makes me especially angry when it's my team. And it makes me question Bruce Arians when I see a team that still cannot handle the little things. Now, yes, did they get hosed on that? And by the way, great play by Devin White to absolutely drill the punter trying to sneak the ball, or the whoever it was, the kicker, forcing a fumble. And anybody who's refereed at any level that has replay, so I guess college and above, knows when you have replay at your disposal, you let the play run itself out. If there's a live ball, dead ball, and you're not sure, that way, if it is a live ball, you didn't just completely blow it dead. And if it was down, you can go back and put it where it was anyway. I mean, anybody knows that. So the jag-off side judge, whoever he was, that was barely even, like, he's flat-footed. Wasn't even like, you know, I want to see referees down like an athletic position, like a stance, almost like a linebacker stance, with their eyes right on what's happening. Like, that comforts me when I see referees doing that. When they're just standing there flat-footed and their shoulders slumped, and then they wave those arms in the air, oh, dead ball. Meanwhile, the ball's on the ground. We have a touchdown. Bucks would have won the game. And I'm fine with them not, because, like I said on Twitter, they're poorly coached right now, and they ain't deserve to fall ass backwards into a win like that. And it doesn't matter anyway. But it still should make you angry. I mean, the officiating at the level it's supposed to be at in the NFL is not there, and it's so far from where it should be, and it's completely inexcusable, and I want accountability. Like, I want that side judge to pay some sort of a penalty for that, just like a player does with his coach when he makes a mistake, or just like the coaches do with his owners or with us when they make mistakes. But anyway, whatever, I'm done with it. These are the things, though, and like I said, it's not even about the Tennessee game. It's about just, again, not doing things the right way, you know? Do things the right way, and you're going to win, you're going to lose sometimes. And again, the Bucks aren't a particularly good team, so they're probably going to lose more often than they win anyway. But do things the right way. And we don't, just like we always haven't. There's a reason why, this, other than this thin little window from 1997 to 2002, basically, and another thin little window in the late 70s, 79, maybe the early 80s. And even with those things all being true, this is still the losingest franchise in all of professional sports in North America. You guys know that? Even I didn't know that. I thought we were ahead of somebody, I really did. But no, our winning percentage is the lowest of the four major sports all time. And at least we have a Super Bowl to hang our hat on, but more crap like this past Sunday, and it just makes you wonder if it'll ever get better again. I used to wonder the same thing in the 90s, and it did, and they won the Super Bowl, and I think it'll happen again, but I'm as disillusioned as I've been in a long time, and I was disillusioned before last week's game. So, going to Seattle this week. And I actually think they have a chance. Let me say this. I don't like Seattle. I have no problem with the team. Pete Carroll's another head coach for as good as he is. And he, I mean, he's won a Super Bowl. But he makes some terrible game management decisions. And I'm not even talking about the whole Malcolm Butler interception thing beyond that, too. And he frustrates me a lot. But Seattle fans annoy me. Because, first of all, they're dorks. Like, if there was a dork quotient, see, like, there's different fan bases that you may not like for whatever reason. Like, you may not like Patriots fans or whatever, but Patriots fans aren't dorky. They might be obnoxious. They might be unlikable. They're not dorks. Like, Seattle fans are dorks, and they think they're cool. You ever knew those kids in high school, and you were probably one of them, because I was probably one of them. My buddy Todd Rometta, if you're out there, Todd, this is one of my favorite quotes. My buddy Todd Rometta used to say, back at Jesuit, everybody is a tool in high school. The cool people are the ones who at least can acknowledge and admit that they're a tool. But no one is not a tool in high school. No one is cool. And it's true. But Seattle people are tools. And they think they're cool. And they think they're so, their little 12th man thing. And all they really have is a stadium that traps noise. And good for them. I wish we had that stadium. I'm very disappointed. I've said before, even though Raymond James Stadium is nice enough, but it should have been built with the heat we have. It should have been built like their stadium that has almost 2/3 of the seating area covered. It's a beautiful place. I've been there once. And, you know, I'm jealous of that stadium, absolutely. But there's nothing special about Seahawks fans. They're just dorks. And so just to stick it up their ass, I'd like to see the Bucks win this week, if for no other reason. But of course, either way, if you look at this game, on paper, it's not a terrible spot for the Bucks. Russell Wilson, we know all about him. He's amazing. And he's, speaking of like stadium envy, we have quarterback envy. There's been all kinds of articles written this week about how Russell Wilson's the anti-Jameis with the way he takes care of the football. He's only got three turnover-worthy plays this season. And a turnover-worthy play, what's the difference between a turnover-worthy play and a turnover? Well, a turnover-worthy play is a play you made that should have resulted in a turnover. So let's say you throw a ball right at somebody on the defense and he drops it. You don't get charged with an interception, but that's a turnover-worthy play. Conversely, let's say you hit your receiver right in the hands and he misses it and it pops up in the air and it's picked off. You do get charged with an interception, but that's not a turnover-worthy play. So Russell Wilson has three of those turnover-worthy plays this season. No one else in football has less than six. And it ain't like he does it by playing it close to the vest, because he's got a ton of touchdowns and he's got the third highest yards per attempt, air yards per attempt, as far as how far he throws the ball every time he throws it. He's not dinking and dunking to protect the ball. He's one of the most aggressive quarterbacks downfield in the league and still taking care of the football at that rate. He's amazing, and my hat goes off to him. But there are still other things. Oh, and a couple other numbers I was looking at this week, just looking at the breakdown of this matchup. Tyler Lockett is one I keep an eye on for Seattle, because the Bucks in any of their nickel packages aren't very good, and I think he could have a big day. The Bucks give up, if you're bored by numbers, don't worry about the actual number, just worry about relative to where it is. The Bucks give up 1.62 yards per slot cover snap. So basically they give up, that's a very high number, they give up more yards on slot coverage snaps than almost any team in the league. They're in the bottom handful. And so something like that, given what Russell Wilson's capable of, someone like Tyler Lockett, that's going to be something to keep an eye on. But I think the Bucks have reasons to be optimistic here. Seattle's offensive line is not great at pass blocking. They're 28th in pass blocking efficiency. On top of that, the Bucks do, believe it or not, lead the NFL in pass rush win rate. They're not getting the sacks, kind of the same as last year, only the opposite, because last year they were getting sacks on a lot of situations, but we thought their pass rush was good because of that, and it wasn't. This year, their pass rush is actually getting wins and getting pressure and just not getting as many sacks. I think they could have a good day against Seattle's offensive line. First of all, Jermaine Ifedi, one of their linemen, is actually dead last in pressures conceded in the NFL amongst like starting linemen, and that's the guy who's going to be across from JPP most of the day. Then their center, Justin Britt, just went on IR, so they're going to have a backup center in there. That's the guy who's going to be across from Vita Vea most of the day. I think the Bucs can make some hay with the pass rush. And on offense, too, for the Bucs. You know, Mike Evans is going to have his work cut out for him, as Seattle out on the edge is pretty well set up. Who's the guy? Hang on a second, because I have his name. The corner. Who am I thinking of here? Oh, yeah. Shaquille Griffin from UCF. I forget. Yeah, he's very, very good. Shaquille Griffin is the guy who's going to be on Evans, and that'll be a fun matchup to watch. But I think Chris Godwin, who is third in the league in yards per slot reception, I mean, he does well in the slot, is going to be going up against their nickelback Jamar Taylor, who is one of the weaker nickel corners in the league. And so I think Godwin could have a big day going up against their secondary. And then on top of all that, if you're into the gambling stuff, and these things do matter, I mean, people can say whatever they want, but these are historical situations that sometimes apply if you look at just a certain spot a team is in. The Bucks this week apply to a road underdog bounce back situation. Road underdogs coming off a loss the week before, 78-34-4 against the spread in the last, 116 times that situation has applied. So they're in a situation, and the spread is 5, by the way, in case you're wondering. They're in a situation where teams tend to bounce back and play better. They're coming off a couple losses. They're a road underdog again. They have won in Seattle before in 2009 in that stadium. Not that it's any of these guys, but it's not a place that's like as hard to win as I think people make it out to be. Bruce Arians is like 6-1 or something in that stadium. And overall, you know, if you're looking for a reason to get excited, maybe there's a couple. I like the 4:05 kickoff on Sunday. It should be cool. And in the meantime, a couple other things before we close the show out. Oh yeah, I know what it was. The Jason Light fake Jameis Twitter account that has been going around all week, people talking about, oh my God, the Bucs GM has a fake Twitter account he uses just to pump up Jameis Winston and to make himself look better. And I watched that video, which was, I mean, if you look at the actual evidence, first of all, Jason Light's phone number, the whole thing didn't match up. There's really not anything to go on there at all, and the reason I haven't talked about it more already on the show is because I don't consider it a story in any way, and I certainly don't believe for one second that Jason Light has that Twitter account. You know, if you want to try and connect it to him in some way or somebody he knows, who the hell knows? But no, reading the quote-unquote evidence, and, you know, on this show, we're going to try not to buy into the crap, okay? We're going to look at actual factual things that we can say this is a thing. I didn't see any of it that really points to that being true. It's Pizzagate, like conspiracy theorist stuff, and I don't care for that. And so that's why I haven't brought it up much on the show today. One final thing, and this is a Friday edition of the show, first day of November. I'm recording this on late Friday morning. So tonight's the last night of the regular season in high school football around the state of Florida. I just want to say, and I don't know how many high school football players listen to my show, or maybe parents of high school football players, but tonight, all over Florida, not everybody, some kids are going to the playoffs, and some kids, even if they're not, are going on to play in college, but a lot of kids tonight are going to buckle a chin strap and pull a pair of shoulder pads over their head for the last time in their lives. And that is a very solemn thing. And to all you guys out there that are doing that, I remember to this day, I mean, my high school football career was not illustrious in any way over at Jesuit High School. I played there for head coach Dominic Sio in the late 90s. Coach Robert Wiener, who's now the head coach at Plant, was my position coach. He was the wideouts coach at Jesuit and the special teams coach, which I played on. So I know him well. And my senior year was 1997 football season. I graduated in the spring of 98. And I remember to this day, my very final snap, and I knew going into it, it was going to be the final snap. We were playing Rockledge in the second round of the playoffs. We had beaten Auburndale in the first round, and we're playing Rockledge from the East Coast in the second round, both over at Jesuit on Himes. And it was getting late. We were down 13-10. Then Rockledge scored with like, you know, a minute and a half left or something to go up 20-10. So I was on the kickoff return team. I was one of the blockers, not one of the returners, but I was on the kickoff return team. So they're kicking off to us, and I was not going to be going back out there on offense in the final series for us to try and score. I was not a starter at receiver. So we went out there for that kickoff, and I was staying there on the field, and I hadn't thought about it much, you know, because when you're in the playoffs, you never think it's your last game. Oh, we're going to win. We're going to play next week. And I thought to myself, like, this is the final play of my life in high school football and probably in football in general. I didn't know about semi-pro football at the time. Wink, wink. So I remember thinking to myself, and they always say play every play like it's your last play. And, you know, you don't always really do that. But I remember thinking, like, I'm going to hit somebody as hard as I humanly possibly can on this one snap because I'm never going to do this again. Like, this is it for me in football. And Rockledge kicked off, and they had some big D1 recruit. And we all, you know, we had assignments. Like, you're supposed to get, you know, L1, L2, like everybody on either side of the ball. And I didn't even care. I think I just picked a guy out that was like the biggest one. I wanted to hit him because it's the last play. Who cares? And I did. I just wanted this guy full force. He didn't even knock him down, of course. But I think I blocked him at least for a couple seconds. And I put a shoulder pad like up under his face mask and just boom, just tried to pop him as hard as I could, which is probably what I should be doing every down. Maybe I wouldn't have been a backup if I had done that every single down. But for that play, I said, I'm doing this. I know there's a lot of kids out there tonight, and maybe some of them realize it, maybe some of them don't, maybe some of them don't care, but being a football player is still a special thing. You know, you can go to the Y and play pickup basketball, and that's not the NBA or college basketball, but you're playing basketball like you are playing basketball. It's not that much different. It's a lower level, of course, but you're playing basketball, and you can go play beer league hockey, and again, same thing, you're playing hockey. Softball is not quite the same as baseball, but again, not that different, aside from the hitting part, not that different at all. But football is different. Football, you can't go replicate. Football, you don't go play in your flag football league and say, I played football. Unless you've buckled the chin strap, unless you've pulled a pair of shoulder pads over your head, even if you weren't any good, I wasn't any good. But I know what it's like out there. And all you guys out there that have played football know what it's like out there. And it's a special thing. Like, nothing tests you the way the game of football does, okay? Coach Sio used to say to Jesuit, like, he'd get mad at us goofing off before games. And he'd say, someone is trying to hurt you legally. And you're laughing. Like, he'd get mad. We'd be messing around. Like, he wanted everybody to be kind of, like, a little more serious before games. And sometimes guys would mess around. Someone is trying to hurt you. It's their job to hurt you. They're being encouraged to, and there won't be any punishment if they do. I'm serious. Like, even to this day, and I still play football. Again, for those of you that think maybe you're done with football, you don't have to be. Go to DunedinPirates.com, the Florida Football Alliance, 18 and over, real live football in pads, helmets and shoulder pad, the whole thing. If you want to sign up, take a look at it. They're doing tryouts now. But anyway, the point is, like, to this day, when I cover a kickoff, every single time I get that butterfly feeling in my stomach, kind of probably how they feel like when the running of the Bulls in Pamplona, when they're about to open that gate for the first time, and you're just standing there like, this is happening in the next 5 seconds, and I'm not sure if I should be doing this. And there's nothing like it in life. There really is not. And again, you don't have to be a stud player to know that. If you've ever been out there, under the lights, between the white lines, whatever you want to call it, and put a pair of shoulder pads on. It's a really, really special thing. That's something, like I said, I believe in the game of football. It's caught a lot of hell the past few years, and a lot of it rightfully so for the safety issues. I wouldn't have a young kid playing in it, but I still think high school football, I mean, that's as American as apple pie, and I think it does a lot for a kid, not just athletically, but emotionally and psychologically. And I'm always grateful that I did it. And for those of you out there that have been doing it and your careers are ending tonight, I salute you. And if you ever want to play again, check out DunedinPirates.com. So thanks to you guys for listening. Thanks to our sponsor, Bill Curry Ford. Thanks to the Joes for letting me have this platform, the number one place anywhere on the internet or anywhere else for Bucks coverage, JoeBucksFan.com. It gives me the chance to get in front of you guys all week. Email me, BobbyGameDay@Yahoo.com if you want. On Twitter, get me at BobbyGameDay. That is the free stretch for week 9 in the NFL. We'll be back next week. Bucks Seahawks on Sunday afternoon. Great chance to have friends over or get together with people you enjoy their company of to watch some Bucks football. 2-5 or not. Don't forget to set your clocks back Saturday. Enjoy the fall weather. Oh, and I didn't even mention Florida, Georgia. I could have done a whole podcast on Florida, Georgia. But bleep Georgia. Go Gators. And wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.